Welcome back to the Children's Hour. Today on the show, we have the head of physics and astronomy at University College London with us, Professor Raman Prinja. The kids have a lot of questions for him about what we see when we just look up.
So you said that the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun. How big is Earth compared?
The Earth is about 100 times smaller. You could fit just over 100 Earths across the width of the sun.
Gosh, I really thought the sun was bigger. I know that seems like it's really big, but I thought the sun was a lot bigger than that.
It's bigger as a volume, but not in the diameter, if you see what I'm saying. You could fit millions of Earths inside it, but if you're looking at the actual diameter of something and how many we'd fit across its diameter, then it's a different number.
Fascinating.
How often do stars collide, and what happens when they do?
Stars don't collide very often, actually, because the space between stars is so wide, it's very rare for these stars to come and actually collide with each other. They're too far apart for this to happen. In the case where they do collide, it's because they were born very close together. Some stars, when they're first made, they're actually born and they're very close together. They start to spin around each other and come closer and closer. In those cases, you could have a big explosions of some kind. You could create, again, very exotic objects like these neutron stars and black holes could happen out of that when they do come together like that. They would have to be born pretty close together for that to happen. So it's pretty rare. Normally, stars are not going to go smashing into each other. Galaxies will smash into each other, but not stars.
Wow.
What does your research focus on?
Here at the University in London, I study the most massive stars in our galaxy. So not all stars are the same. The sun is actually a normal kind of star. Some stars are born maybe 20, 100 times more massive than the sun. So I do my research on those stars. These are the stars that will end their lives in huge explosions called supernovae. And the things that are left behind are very strange, really bizarre objects called neutron stars and black holes. So I study the lives of these most massive stars in our galaxies.
When a supernova happens, does that ever get seen on planet Earth just by normal people like us not looking up with a telescope?
Oh, yeah. So there are examples in cave drawings of people recording that they just happened. So I think you do see them. But they're rare events.
Can you predict when it would happen? Can you say to us, and in 5 years, if you look up at such and such a place, you're going to see this event?
We can predict them, but not in 5 years. What we can do is we can tell that in a few million years, something's going to happen. So, for example, the beautiful constellation of Orion, which is one of the most amazing ones to explore, by the way, by just looking up with your eyes. It's Orion the Hunter. Great stories about this constellation. It has two massive stars, and one of them, Betelgeuse, is expected to go supernova and explode probably within about 2 to 3 million years. That's the best we can say. You can't say it's going to happen in 5 years. That's impossible.
So it's not like an eclipse where you have a date.
No.
We just have to say, in a couple million years, you'll see this.
So I heard you talk about black holes, and I know that black holes are dark matter, but what really is dark matter?
Black holes aren't really dark matter. Black holes are really very, very dense regions of material that's just got ripped apart, spaghettified, if you like. So it's not really dark matter in that sense. Dark matter that you read about is particles, if you like, material that has a gravity, but it's in very, very small particles all over the place. So, for example, the sun, there are streams of amazing particles, smaller than an atom, that are floating around. And there are so many of them that they have a gravity. We can't see them. That's why they call them dark. You know, you can't see them with your telescopes. That's why they call them dark. But they have a gravity. They have a mass. So that's what dark matter is.
It's kind of a miracle anyone could even discover something that you can't see, that's just a dark spot, and know that it has a mass. How do you know it has a mass if you can't see anything? How would you even know to look at that spot and say, let's look at this really dark spot?
Because what happens is it has a gravity. So, you know, something's out there, right? Okay, it might be invisible. You can't see. The same thing with black hole. You can't see a black hole. But if a normal star comes near a black hole, you can see the normal star being pulled into this space, into that area. So something's pulling it. We know something's pulling it. We can't see it. Because it has a gravity, we can work out there must be something there, right?
Mm. We're talking with Professor Raman Prinja. He has written a book called Wonders of the Night Sky. Astronomy Starts with Just Looking Up. He's the head of the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University College in London. You're listening to the Children's Hour. We'll be right back.
Black holes, dark place. Strangest things in the universe and outer space. It has no surface like a planet or a star. It can suck you in from very far. It's a huge amount of mass in a small area, a black hole. A black hole. Black hole.
From Marky Monday's Adventures in Space, that's Black Hole. You're listening to the Children's Hour. I'm Katie Stone. Today we're talking with Professor Raman Prinja. He's the Departmental Head of Physics and Astronomy at the University College London. He also is the author of a book for kids, Wonders of the Night Sky, Astronomy Starts with Just Looking Up. It's an illustrated guide to what you can see as you look in the night sky. Professor Prinja, your book talks about how we can just look up and appreciate and understand astronomy, and you list many, many examples of things we can actually look for and tips about how we can find them. But what I want to know is, what phenomenon in the night sky is the one that made you want to become a professor of astrophysics?
It's very simple, the one that really always used to fascinate me. And it's the easiest thing, but we tend to take it too much for granted. And that's the moon. There's so much to explore on the moon, you know. If you look at the day-night line, and even if you've got just a small pair of binoculars and you look along the day-night line of the moon, you can see so many amazing shadows of mountains and craters. And it's really got me hooked. You know, living in cities, you know, even Albuquerque or, you know, and the rest of the big cities, you can always see the moon. But I think we sometimes forget how beautiful it is. I used to think wow, you know, Apollo astronauts were landing up there, you know, and you could actually go and ask yourself, whereabouts was that? You know, you could, and you just capture your imagination to think that these astronauts were walking on this place. And I honestly, I would recommend it to everyone. Don't ignore the moon. I mean, especially when you have a crescent moon or a half moon, if you've got a small pair of binoculars, just run that binoculars along the day-night line, and just, it's amazing. It's beautiful. And you can see these mountain ranges and craters, the shadows from them. It's lovely. And let your imagination go, because we're going back to the moon, right? So some of you on this screen could well be flying back to the moon. And I think, yeah, it's very likely.
That's pretty cool thought. You know, one of the things that we have here in New Mexico is a ancient celestial observatory at Chaco Canyon. It was built more than 1,000 years ago or so. There's actually an observatory that shows us the cycle of the moon. Little did I know until I understood a little more about Chaco Canyon, like how the sun, it rises further in the south, in the northern hemisphere for us in the winter, and then much further in the north in the summer, making it summer for us. The moon has a similar cycle of where it sets and where it rises over a many year period. And I just find that fascinating. I don't think I even realized that the moon itself has its own pattern as to how it goes around the Earth. And it's not in this perfect circle. It's slightly off.
We think of everything being perfect circles in space, but quite a lot of them aren't actually perfect circles. I mean, Mars doesn't have a perfect circle as it moves around the sun. And the moon doesn't have a perfect circle. This is why, for example, you got an annular eclipse recently. It's because the moon was just a little bit too far away from us to completely block out the sun, because its orbit, again, is not a perfect circle. Sometimes it's slightly closer to us. Sometimes it's slightly further away. This was an example where it was just a bit further away when that annular eclipse happened for you recently. So you got the ring rather than the total eclipse you're going to get next year. And it's also amazing that how so many of our ancestors did so much really precise measurements of these things. They were so clever. I mean, we know they were very clever because we could see around all the amazing things they were doing. But in astronomy as well, they made some remarkable measurements, really remarkable measurements. No computers, no calculators, right? Just careful thinking.
Just the original computer that's inside our heads.
The best one.
So my dad has a PhD in physics and fusion that he got at Princeton. What do those have to do with astronomy?
When we look at the stars and we ask, well, why do they shine? Why does the sun shine? Okay. The sun shines because it's making energy right in its core. And the way it's making its energy is exactly what your dad does, which is fusion reactions. So there is inside the core, right in the center of the stars, there is this incredibly hot and pressured condition, if you like a cooker in there almost. You can have these nuclear fusion reactions. Each time you have a fusion reaction, huge amount of energy is released. So the sun today is taking 700,000 tons of hydrogen, converting it into 695,000 tons, if you like, every microsecond. And that little difference is the fusion reaction. An enormous amount of energy is being made. So what your dad is looking at is really the engines of the stars. The engines of the stars are these fusion reactions, which your dad studies.
Wow. This is They Might Be Giants.
The sun is a miasma of incandescent plasma. The sun's not simply made out of gas. No, no, no. The sun is a quagmire. It's not made of fire. Forget what you've been told in the past.
Plasma.
Electrons are free.
Plasma.
State of matter, not gas, not liquid, not solid. The sun is no red dwarf. I hope it never morphs into some supernova.
collapse. Or the sun is a miasma of incandescent plasma. I forget what I was told by myself. Elf.
Plasma.
Electrons are free.
Plasma.
A fourth state of matter, not gas, not liquid, not solid. That song,
plasma.
They got it wrong. That thesis has been rendered invalid.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, and today on the show, we're talking with Professor Raman Prinja. He's the Departmental Head of Physics and Astronomy at University College London, and he just wrote a new book called Wonders of the Night Sky. Astronomy starts with just looking up.
What happens if a planet touches the sun?
Planets are very, very tiny compared to the sun, so they would just get completely swallowed up. I mean, they would be burned. So our sun in about 5 billion years from now is actually going to swell up because it's going to start to die. And when that happens, the sun is going to become swollen up and it's going to just gobble up Mercury. It'll gobble up Venus. Earth might just about escape, but I think we need to leave the planet before then and find somewhere else to live. Planets can't survive if they get near stars like that. Stars are too hot, fiercely hot, and they will just gobble them up.
Well, it makes me wonder about solar flares. We can see pictures of solar flares. There are these little arcs. It almost looks like a bursting volcano is spewing stuff into the universe. And when I think about solar flares, I think about a lot of things like the auroras that we can see on planet Earth.
Right.
That's when you're in a certain part of the planet, usually pretty far north or pretty far south towards the poles, where the sky starts just looking weird, like there's colorful waves happening in the night sky. Can you explain what causes this amazing phenomenon of these auroras? And do they have something to do with solar flares?
Yeah, no, they're connected. So this is another beautiful example of a wonder of the night sky, actually, because you're right. So what happens is the sun, occasionally it has these huge eruptions because there's a lot of magnetic fields and activity happening on the sun all the time. And when one of these giant eruptions happens, either a flare or something even bigger than a flare, which is called a mass eruption, big coronal mass ejection, these things get launched out. So you're getting really hot, charged particles being launched away from the sun. They're leaving the sun. They're really being thrown out into space. And if they hit the Earth, what happens is they get trapped in the Earth's magnetic field. We are lucky in some ways. We have a big magnetic field around the Earth, which protects us from a lot of these particles. But when you get a lot of electrically charged particles thrown out from the sun, they get trapped in the magnetic fields, and the Earth's magnetic fields pile in at the North and South Pole. So they enter the atmosphere from the North and the South Pole. And because they're very energetic and they're very electrically charged in our atmosphere, they start to create these effects of light that you're starting to see, and that's the aurora. And they look a bit like these shimmering curtains, like the ones behind you there. Imagine like a sort of night sort of shimmering curtains of beautiful blue and red and green colors, and that's the aurora. So you're getting these charged particles from the sun entering the poles along the magnetic field lines, creating sort of reactions almost with the gases in our atmosphere. And you get these lights, you get amazing lights. And you do have to be quite north or quite far south, yeah.
That's Professor Raman Prinja, and you can learn more and find links at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Just Look Up. More coming up in just a minute.
You're listening to The Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Thanks to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for hosting The Children's Hour. Support for The Children's Hour provided by New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund.